Hello and welcome again to the Anything But Quiet Time podcast. We are Rochelle and Carter, and we have something up our sleeve.
Well, I can't put
and
mine up
I mean
my
that literally.
Because if I put mine up my sleeve, it would be coming out of my armpit.
This, well, you have a short sleeve shirt. This is Ebenezer Scrooge. And you have
the silent partner.
Oh, man.
You remember this guy.
Who you got there?
This was the terrifying one.
Yeah.
I how many renditions of A Christmas Carol are there? I don't know. Too numerous to count. So many. But every time this guy is portrayed.
Yeah.
It's just.
He's just there. Right.
It's ominous.
Terrifying. It is a powerful rendition of Scrooge, A Christmas Carol podcast available for you to download right now. You text the word Scrooge to the number 67101. And this is part of, so we're part of Hope Media Group, and we are so excited to present this starring Sean Astin from The Goonies and Rudy.
Keep it
and
going.
Stranger Things.
There's so many others.
I'm missing a big one. Lord of the Rings.
I was going to say there's three of those.
Wow. Yeah.
So a lot.
He stars as Ebenezer Scrooge in this four-episode podcast.
I can't believe you left out Encino Man with Brendan Fraser.
I'm so sorry that I left out Encino Man. No, it is a, again, they're like 25, 30-minute episodes, and great to sit around with the family and listen to the story, even more of a redemptive story maybe than you heard before with this rendition. The word Scrooge, you text that to the number 67101.
How do you feel about this guy?
Death?
Like, in general.
Yeah, in general? I mean—
Are you
part
scared?
Of you's frightened of
Are
it.
Are you scared of death? Are you scared of dying?
Well, I think some of it is you fear the circumstances. I do. Maybe I shouldn't speak generally. Of like, what is it going to look like? And because I think you asked that question recently of what would you do with your last day? And you don't know, like, am I in a hospital bed? You know, is there pain? Is there whatever? But I think there's such hope that as for the other side, not really. But I think it's also surreal too. So there's a lot of certain days when you're revved up and you've been in the Word and man, you're just, you know, I'm just ready and this world's just drats. And then other days it's like, man, I had a good day, and I'd miss my family, and I kind of have conflicting thoughts with that.
And I think that's perfectly acceptable. I think in many ways, I mean, I think Jesus was battling it out in Gethsemane.
Yeah, I'm actually going to get into that.
With a little bit of that and a lot of other things. I mean, can you imagine and I don't think we can. We can't fathom all that he was taking on in the next several hours. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the sin of humanity— the betrayal of friends and family.
Yep.
I mean, that's these men were his family, these disciples, these women who followed with him. I can't fathom that. So, but he did go through those things in order to be able to empathize with what it is to wear flesh.
This is incredible. I don't know if you were getting there anyway or you just had that thought, but that is literally. Jesus is God and he's human is what I'm talking about today. So,
yes. Well,
so
thank you.
Death
once again,
inspired you.
Grim Reaper.
Wow. Okay. Thank you,
so
sir.
Maybe not as grim.
Not as grim, no.
Happy Reaper.
You have found a great. It's a glass half full moment.
This
so thank
is,
you.
And by the way, these are ornaments.
Yeah.
And one might think, why would I hang that on my tree? But you.
Well, you hang all of them.
I have a Darth Maul on my tree.
Well, okay.
There are issues.
Yeah, no. So. All right, you going first or am I going first?
Actually, I don't know if that's true. I have Darth Vader on my tree.
Okay, all right.
You can go first if you've. It feels like it. The
but
ball
we'll get right into that then.
Thrown, you're going to hit it out the park.
So I'm actually in Mark 13 and 14 because we've been walking through this in our Sunday school class, and I've gotten to teach a couple of different times, and one was Mark 13 and 14, which is a lot. And I forget how many verses are in each individual chapter. Like, I don't think about it. And sometimes it's like 20, and then I think Mark 14 is like 71 or something like that.
Okay.
So that's the Gethsemane, and that's all that part, and then him being arrested. And but it's one conundrum that came up with this passage. And in Mark 13, Jesus is talking to the disciples about the end of the world. And obviously this comes up, it's always an interesting subject and people have a lot of different thoughts on it. And of course, with what's going on in Israel, it comes up again. And somebody pointed out, man, when we hit that 2,000 year mark, if he hasn't come back, we hit that 2,000 year mark of 20 30 and 20, 33, mm-hmm. you know people are going to be start predicting the end like crazy. Mm-hmm. It's been 2,000 years. Now I'm going to juxtaposition the things that I've gone through onto what I think it's saying. It's like, hey, we're not supposed to know. Okay, yeah. We're just not supposed to know. But he is talking about, you know, for those that will be in the end times to be prepared aware. And
yeah.
aware.
Yeah.
And he says something very interesting. No one knows, this is 1332. No one knows the day or the hour when these things will happen, not even the angels in heaven or the Son himself. Only the Father knows. And since you don't know when that time will come, be on guard, stay alert. And by the way, that last part I think is essential. I heard somebody talking about, there. Here's the reason, it's presented right there, why we shouldn't guess, because we shouldn't know, is that if we knew that Jesus was coming back in 1,000 years, mm-hmm. we might have a propensity to get lazy, mm-hmm. not really live the Christian life, but we're on guard, we're staying alert. And so I think that's kind of the why of just like, just let it be, pay attention, but let it be. Mm-hmm. But that conundrum is, if Jesus is God, how does he not know something? If God is omniscient, and this is when I started looking into this, you'll hear a lot of different faiths, especially like Islam, who doesn't believe that God, they believe God can't have a son and that God would never die. So they don't believe Jesus is God. They believe he was a prophet. And so this is one thing that the skeptics will bring up. Well, if God is omniscient and Jesus is God, according to you, and then let me take you over here to Mark 13:32. Jesus doesn't know something. How is he God? And you're like, what? And I got some great insight that it's the two natures of Jesus that's really, really important here. Jesus is fully God and fully man. Mm-hmm. And I think what I did was this deep dive. I even brought up a couple of these verses last week of where Jesus didn't know everything. Mm-hmm. And we'll bring these up again. But I think where I want to start with, Jesus is a human. Mm-hmm. And that I often don't think about it in every possible way that is. Mm-hmm. An analogy I heard is sometimes we think of Jesus like Christopher Reeves in Superman, mm-hmm. when he was just pretending to not be able to lift something. Mm. Or the scene that I looked up is he's walking with Lois Lane and a gun comes out from between the buildings. Hey, come here. And it's a mugger that takes him in the alleyway. And he's like, oh, sir, we don't want any trouble, you know? Yeah. And then when the gun accidentally fires, he catches the bullet, but then pretends to faint. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like just trying to keep that. I'm Clark Kent. I'm not Superman in front of Lois. And sometimes we think of Jesus as that. Mm-hmm. He's God in just this pretend human body. He really knows everything and he is super strong that he could do whatever. And I have to remember that, yes, I don't want to say anything heretical here because he is God. But he's human. And he bled, he got sick, he stubbed his toe, he did all sorts of things that humans would do. And when I looked up that juxtaposition of the Superman character, and then I was like, you know what? You know who would do it really well? I looked up Jesus is tired, the chosen. Mm-hmm. And I found a perfect one. He's stumbling. The disciples are arguing in this scene on The Chosen, and he stumbles in from town. I assume it was from healing people. Mm-hmm. I think it was in that time frame. And he just like quickly looks at him and goes, good night. And he just, not rude, but just like he goes to his tent and there's blood on him. He's exhausted. His mom comes over to help him get ready for bed. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, thank you. You know, I'm so tired. And he gets in bed and it's like, wow, that's human. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, let's get into this verse.
And
yeah, go ahead.
Just making sure that is understood, that obviously we know that that's a TV show.
Oh yeah.
And this is a depiction of what Jesus could very well have done any number of times on such a day as that.
Yeah.
Because we do know that he went through and some passages say, and he healed them all.
Uh-huh.
Everybody brought all of their sick, all of their hurting, and he healed them all. So those are long days.
Well, and this is where it gets biblical, right? Philippians 2, starting verse 6. Though he was God, he did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared, this kind of crosses over into verse 8, but when he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Mm-hmm. And the analogy I heard is that much like if I asked you to close your eyes, mm-hmm. but then look at me. Like if I asked you to keep your eyes closed, but look at me. Well, you can't. You can't see me. You're actively doing something where you're cutting off the ability to see. And we don't know what all that looks like with Jesus, but there is a, he is God, so he has access to knowledge. Mm-hmm. He has access to strength and power, but he's in a human body where he's on purpose cutting off that access so he can experience what he needs to here on earth. Mm-hmm. And now Hebrews 1 also talks about like the Father calls the Son God and talks about his throne. So we're clear. Jesus is God, but it gave me such a, especially just when I kind of sat back after I heard that Superman thing and I was like, I think unbeknownst, I've kind of thought it like that sometimes, that it's just like, wink, wink, I got
it. Have you?
I mean, I think subconsciously.
It wasn't until you gave that analogy that I've ever thought that that might be a thought, but it's certainly if I came to faith later in life.
Yeah, yeah,
especially sure. Then, it'd be like thinking, trying to think that through. Hearing things that were expressed in the church by others who seem to embrace it fully and have for some time and just like, wait a second, I need a tick. Mm-hmm. I need a moment to mull this over in my brain and try to comprehend. But so much of this, because of the honor of being a pastor's kid and knowing from the beginning of
sure, it, sure,
you know,
yeah.
It's something I've just always taken on faith and have never really struggled with.
Well,
ever.
It's not that I'm not faithful that he was human. I'm not saying that.
No, I'm not talking about you in general. I know where you stand, but I'm thinking about maybe you who are watching this right now and I've never been able, and this is perfect, never been able to sympathize with you on that level because I grew up in a different experience. Well, God created man, but certainly has never looked at it from the perspective of man, what it must be like to live as man. And so knowing that and loving so much that he would take on that person's flesh, he already had the persona of the Son, right? Because he was there in the beginning and at the creation of the world and spoke things into being. He was the Word. So he's always existed. He's always been that part of God. But for him to take on flesh— so that he could sympathize and in this case, empathize, actually being able to get into these shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, that is who God is.
Well, and that's the verse I brought up last week with Hebrews 5:8 says that even though he was God's son, he learned obedience through suffering. And my point last week was that if I'm an expert in something, I still can't act like I know it all.
Yeah.
Now, and this study really gave me such a... just an appreciation. I think it kind of gave me that same appreciation as when you watch something like The Passion of the Christ. Mm-hmm. You know it, but until you're watching The Chosen even, and you see like, oh man, I think in the back of my head, write it off of like, well, he's got it, you know. But that's where we get into now Mark 14 in the Garden of Gethsemane, and here he is facing this horrendous thing. His soul is being crushed to the point of death, I'm paraphrasing his words, and maybe that is the exact quote. He's about to sweat blood. I don't think it is described in Mark, but it's described elsewhere. He's about to sweat droplets of blood. He's under so much pressure and stress about it. And he gives us this great example of when we're in our humanness going, God, is there any other way? But let it be your will. I don't know, there's something there about he still knows, like his full knowledge isn't there as a human on earth, but he still knows enough to, my Father knows it all, and I'm going to make sure that I submit to him in that way. And so for me, like—
It was just—
I have to follow that example.
Oh, say that again.
I have to follow that example. Even when I am at the end of my rope and I think, well, what is the plan here, God? Jesus trusted that in his humanness, especially with where he'd been before, and to wrap up the conflict of mm-hmm. the question mm-hmm. in regards to if you talk to somebody of Islam sure. or something, the two natures is the answer.
Yeah.
The Bible talks about Jesus as God. Yes, it does say he doesn't know something, but we have to recognize that God made himself less than God. Jesus made himself human. And that answers that question of why there were certain things he couldn't know on earth, and obviously certain things he couldn't do. He wasn't all powerful and he wasn't omnipresent either. Mm-hmm. So he submitted in that way and chose to not know everything.
Yeah. No, there are so many facets to the diamond of who God is. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and as to the why would he do what he did for us? I mean, there's an answer to teach us the prayer, thy will be done. Mm. And you can walk this out because I did. And there's another reason to empathize.
Yeah.
Well, you don't know what it feels like, but he does, because he took on so much. And the worst known death at that time was crucifixion.
Yeah.
It was just horrible, because yeah. once you thought you were about to die, you wouldn't die. You just kept living, and they would be forced to at some point break the legs of the people so that they couldn't keep standing up to try to catch their breath.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would literally—I mean, they would die from asphyxiation.
Yeah.
But anyway, when you were talking, there's this movie, and Bruce Willis is in it, and I don't think it was a big box office opener, and so I don't know that anybody really watched it, but I sure did. It was called The Kid.
Okay.
And it came out in early 2000s, I think-ish. And there's this little boy forgive me, this has been out for a very long time, so I'm just going to go ahead and share that.
Oh, you're ruining the ending.
No, it's not the ending.
Okay.
Sort of.
Okay.
But Bruce Willis is the character. We're following his character through this movie, and all of a sudden he gets visited by a version of himself that's a child. And then he gets visited later by a version of himself that's in the future.
Okay, now it sounds like Scrooge again.
It's a little bit like that, where he starts to unpack the reason why he was the way he was. But in a sense, it's the same human being, but all these different experience levels. Mm-hmm. And so this child is no different than this man, except for the level of growth and saturation of knowledge and all of that stuff. There's nothing different between them except experience, right? Mm. And interestingly enough, God could not experience what the son would experience, but wanted to experience it. And so he did through the son, who, yes, was kept from certain things in terms of flesh, because flesh is binding. You're in the prison of your own body and you can only do what it lets you do. So I mean, it's just so many different – you could hurt yourself trying to figure out eternity and who God is, because he is vaster than eternity. So
it gets really complicated.
But if you go down those paths, to do what you did is where it stays healthy. Mm-hmm. If you do it because you're on a path to try to and I can easily do this because of my obsessive compulsive disorder, there is not enough answers in the world that could satisfy – a fearful approach. But what if it's not true?
Yeah.
What if it's not real?
Yeah.
Wait a second. Lord, help me open my heart and my mind to understand as much as this human body actually can, because there's evidence for him everywhere. And we can always lean on that understanding. We can always lean on those truths when other things are too monstrous for us to try to figure out. Mm-hmm. And when people actually sit down and are curious and they ask you these kinds of questions, how does this Trinity thing work?
Right, right.
You now have these incredible verses that you've unpacked, and you can be honest and transparent and say, that's an area that is easily a struggle for most people because ...
Well, I think it's one of those, the Trinity is something we need to understand to a certain point.
As much as we can.
And believe it. But you, it is hard to grasp as well. We have to recognize that. We have to be an expert.
Well,
right?
I mean, just atoms alone. If you are some brainiac, then, and you're in the right field in terms of understanding, I don't know, neuro anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you can describe things, you have a gifting that I don't have. And that was created in what? a blink of an eye by our God, the design.
Right,
everything.
Right.
So in comparison, I'm trying to create a gauge.
Sure.
Of something that small and so completely complex and yet simple in design.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to explain the one who created that in the blink of an eye?
Yeah.
You can't, but let's try together. That's why I think Jesus gives us bite-sized pieces, and he continues to, I mean, this is why we're encouraged to continue to read God's word, to hide it in our hearts so that we won't sin against him. As best as we can understand, he wants to unpack these verses over and over and over again, giving you something new every single time. But it is a Holy Spirit work that has to be in the other person who is trying to figure things out. It has to be with explaining the Trinity. At some point, they either will believe or they won't.
Yeah.
And the Holy Spirit has to do that. But having as much as you can and doing the work like you've done.
Well, and let me wrap it up by saying the point of him coming, you know, is the gospel, right?
Yes.
There's so much that we can, you know, like following his lead of the Father's will, right? That is up there and great. But the point of him coming is to save us.
Yes.
And it is the gospel that we are sinners and a sacrifice has to be made. We can't pay that debt ourselves because we have separated ourselves from a holy God. So God comes down to earth. We kind of cover that middle part. He becomes flesh. And it was Michael Gunger, who was a praise and worship leader. He's kind of gone away from faith and kind of is in that progressive realm of, you know, I think the Bible is just a nice way to live. Mm. And it was a viral tweet the other day. He said, I'm sitting at a praise and worship service and they're singing How Precious is the Blood. Mm. And he said, what is this constant bloodlust that we need? And you know, the guy I saw, Red Pen Logic, Tim Barnett, is a great apologist. And he said, and he kind of wrote on the graphic and he's like, it's everything.
Yeah, it is.
It's everything. A sacrifice has to be made. Justice has to be served. And this is what Colossians 1:20 says. And through him, God reconciled everything to himself. He made peace with everything in heaven and on earth by means of Christ's blood on the cross.
If you're depleted of blood, you're depleted of life. The first sacrifice that we know about in the Bible is the one that took place after the garden, in the Eden incident, let's call it. First they made leaves, and God chose to take the sacrifice of a pure and innocent. And he chose to sacrifice that animal and create a covering.
Mm-hmm.
And the blood that is shed, there is life in that blood, and you've chosen death.
Mm.
And the blood is covering now. And so this is why we have the ritual, and it's very different than other sacrifice. You'll see other communities with their way of sacrificing, and it got pretty disgusting. With the Jewish people's ritual, you know, there were different offerings made for different reasons, sacrifice for sin or anything else, but also sacrifices of praise. You think about Darius, King Darius. This is the king that threw Daniel in the lion's den.
Oh, okay.
Darius really loved Daniel. Like, he's new to the kingdom, kind of new here. Daniel knows the turf. Of course, he overthrew the Babylonian government, and now he's, you know, the Persian Empire. But Daniel was one of the people he kept on. He liked him. But the other wise guys didn't like Daniel at all. He'd always gotten in good with Nebuchadnezzar, I'm giving him. These are how VeggieTales depict the names.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
But anyway, he got good with Nebuchadnezzar, even had some dealings with his son Belshazzar. If you really want to get into deep history, which at this moment I am not prepared to do, but I know there's been like some like confusion about who actually was the son of Nebuchadnezzar. Was it actually Belshazzar, or is that just Nebuchadnezzar later in life, or is it a different person altogether? That's not important. The next person we know that takes command is Darius. As it's described in Daniel. And he throws Daniel, this man that he likes, in the den of lions. Why?
Not rhetorical. Because he made a decree. He was a little bit tricked by the guys that didn't like Daniel.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, hey, we want to make sure that we're all worshiping you and not praying or whatever.
That's right. He made a decree, but why couldn't he have broken it?
Because I would say is this analogy to God, that is binding.
It's binding. What the king says goes, and not even the king can undo it.
Yeah.
Unless he finds some loophole. God had a loophole ready, and he knew that the only way he could go against the decree is if he himself did something about it, because only him going against the divine setup of the Garden of Eden could offer any justification for the sin of mankind.
He's the only one that could be perfect.
And so the innocent is nailed to a cross, and his blood, where there is life in the blood, covers the choice of death that we have all had at some point or another, because it's sin in our lives. When we make those mistakes, it's like, ah, it's a little white lie. It's sin. Mm-hmm. We call it what it is, and we're not perfect. We could actually maybe go through our entire lives, and it looks from the outside that we are perfect, but inside we may be struggling with lust or wanting to kill somebody or whatever it is, and Jesus tells us that that's still sin. So we are all guilty. How does one get out of that without getting thrown into the lion's den?
Yeah. But again, we can't pay it ourselves, right? And I think what's interesting about society is generally we all think we're ourselves are good people. I've never killed anybody. You know, I'm a nice guy. But I still think it's interesting that I think everybody, when we kind of shift topics and we talk about that thing in our past that we regret, and man, I wish I wouldn't have spoken that way to them. Man, I wish I would have, whatever this sin might be that is so obvious, wish I wouldn't have cheated on them. Wonder what that relationship would have been like if I didn't cheat on them. What would it have looked like if I had actually honored my parents or treated my kids right? Or I think there's such regret in all of us. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to see that is sin. There's a lot of other things too, right? Yeah. A lot of things that people don't categorize as sin is. But we have to see that we've all blown it in some way. Mm. And that the only way that could be made up for is God becoming flesh and dying on a cross, spilling his blood for our sin.
Yes, yes. And if you unpack John 3:16, for God so loved, you have to keep the additional part of that he gave his one and only son. So there was death involved, but who believes in him will be saved and have eternal life. But the love, yes, we can unpack that. A lot of people do love to unpack the loving part of Jesus that seems obvious, the compassionate side, the servant heart. He gives us all of these things. We can learn from that person so much, even before his death. But the main reason of why he came, he loved us unto death.
Yeah.
And I bought this for my kids. They're not going to listen to this podcast, or at least I won't let them.
This is their Christmas present? Oh,
this is partly a Christmas present. I was doing, you know how I do, because I tell Carter this all the time. I peruse and I have to find the right things. And I came across these, you know, the books that look like they're books, but they're not really books. They're like secret hiding places.
No.
You don't know about these?
No.
Okay, so you put them up on a bookshelf and it looked like it could be even a place where you store some money or something if you wanted to.
Okay.
But it kind of looks like a book.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see.
And then you open it up. There's a little magnet that can keep it shut.
Yeah.
And I found them and they're Christmas. And in fact, this is really cool. I was excited about it. I'm like, oh, there's another one, but it's smaller. And there's another one and it's even smaller. And they're nesting books like this.
Okay.
So there's a book within a book within a book within a book. And they get smaller as you go. And every single one of these is decorated with your favorite themes of Christmas. Wildly missing from the themes, I know it will shock everybody, is the nativity scene. Mm. But you have Santa and you have Frosty and you have a reindeer. And I went on Etsy last night and there was this very kind gentleman. Thank you, Jeff. I said, I need a cross made. And I need it to be this big. And then I want it to say something. And I can't remember exactly what I'm having him scrawl on it, but something along the lines, always remember the why. Mm. For you, John 3:16. Because at the heart of the reason why he was born, the reason why we know about celebration, the reason why we have family get-togethers, the reason why I went shopping, the reason why all the good feels, the reason for living, taking a breath.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is the why. And knowing how to love well is what he asks us to do for the rest of our lives, which is even to serve unto death, to do it well, to love well. And I think hearing that from a mountain where lightning and storm clouds are over Mount Sinai and the Israelites are running scattered and Moses is like, come on, God desires relationship with us. Mm. it would not be the same as when Jesus sat and ate bread with the people. And he touched and healed the unclean, and they got close enough to realize his heart. And God established law, certainly, in the Old Testament for the protection of his people, also to set them apart from the other laws in the land. From what I understand, if you read through some of the, I don't know if it's the Assyrian, or there is information in the temples of other cultures at that time. Mm-hmm. Here are their laws.
Right.
And there, you might find some similarities. They are vastly different, though. Mm. And God wanted to do that for a purpose, because he doesn't want any association with that other thing.
Sure.
And they, by comparison, the Jewish law is very lenient, like very loving, mm-hmm. very, like everybody would want to know that God if they gave it a chance.
Sure.
Back in that day.
Sure.
So I find that fascinating. And then Jesus comes along and... he's pretty awesome.
I think that if we look at, in terms of the, you know, here, this last part of the conversation, we've been talking about the sacrifice and why it's necessary, and it would be like how we respect a just judge.
Yes.
Can you imagine if the judge in the trials of Nuremberg after the Holocaust, after World War II and the atrocities committed, the judge said, you know what, we'll let this one go. You know, yeah, I see you guys wish you wouldn't have done it. And mm-hmm. you said you didn't mean it. We'll just let it go. Outcry.
Well, and why would there be outcry?
It's injustice.
Well, how would we know it was injustice?
Well, then you get into morals, and why we have morals in the first place is because of a creator.
And because we have that moral gauge from our creator.
Yeah.
And we are his image. We are made in his image, is what I mean to say. We were made in his image. So we have that in our system. So to your point, why should we not then be riled? Why would we think we would get scot-free? Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't mm-hmm. do the same thing as them, but you're not the one weighing sin. Because it's like, okay, if you have a touch of gangrene in an infected part of your body, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. the doctor would tell you you have gangrene. He wouldn't go, well, it's just a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
No, there's infection. This is nasty. We got to do something. We got to do something. It's just a little sin. Well, it infects all of you.
Yeah. We don't take it – I know I don't. We don't take it seriously enough. Until we, like I mentioned, we royally screw up, there are often days and weeks and months where it's just like, But this is against a holy God that we're talking about and his standard of perfection. And yet, so loving to say, okay, I'm going to step in for you. Because I know that you can't be perfect.
I know we got to kind of wrap up on some stuff, but I was going to do something else, and I think I should do this instead. The last part of the Semitic alphabet from Psalm 119, which I've been kind of, you know, sharing some stuff that I've been going through in Psalms, and I had to take it piece by piece because this is a big old Psalm, as we talked about even last week, 176 verses. And the last... I found this fascinating. The last character is a cross-shaped mark.
This is in the Jewish alphabet?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
That's fascinating. And this is what I got out of it. Because the last part, we've been reading through this psalm and we're hearing about how we're crying to you and we're coming to you and we just think you're awesome and you are holy, Lord. And honestly, it sounds, just because I wasn't there, it may have sounded very crude, perhaps, in the day, but it was a psalm. So I would imagine it has this, like, holy effect or whatever, but it sure sounds almost a bit pretentious. Sometimes you read the psalm, you're like, this guy's a goody-goody. I always keep your commands close to my heart.
Uh-huh,
I'm thinking about them day and night. All of these things that some of the psalmists are saying, you're like, man, these guys were really good.
And depending on the day you had, you're like, yeah, right there with you. And then some days you're like, oh, man. Right.
But you know what? The very last part of the part that is labeled the cross-shaped mark says, I have gone astray like a lost sheep. Seek your servant, for I do not forget your commandments. But I messed up.
Yeah.
I went astray. Would you find me again? It's vulnerable. It's transparent. It's, you're not a goody two shoes. And so the last verse, so relatable, will tell people, even in passing nowadays, I love you. Love you, mean it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? will hear it or even say it, as well as blow kisses in the air to that person. And I've even seen it portrayed in movies where kind words like these are exchanged between frenemies, right? Mean girls or whatever it is.
Right, right.
Both parties will make a face behind the other's back the moment they have the chance. But love gets thrown around even between people who have promised to journey hand in hand with one another. Whether it's friendship or man and wife, we promise our whole heart, and yet there seems to always be a piece that we keep selfishly minded. I know I do. I love my husband so much. Why does he not fill the water bottles after he, or whatever it is?
Yeah.
If he's listening, right, he's like, I started doing that again. Okay, fine. But just serve. And then maybe if he sees you do it, maybe if that's between him and God, just serve. If you've spoken it in love and you've said, hey, would you mind doing the thing? And then just serve, right? Mm. I have to kind of keep doing that. But I love him with my whole heart, and yet I've always reserved that peace. And love is humble, and it does serve. And if Jesus is love, then that's what I need to connect to. And I'm a human, and I must continue to process this.
Yeah.
Do I think that Jesus had to continue to process this even though he was love manifested? As
we got into the human side of things, it would seem so.
With all of those people coming to him, can you imagine how gross the things he had to see?
Mm.
Do you think he didn't smell the gangrene?
Right, right.
He did. Do you? I mean, we were talking about whether we know God is omniscient. He's omnipresent. He has all of these things. And there were times where we definitely know he was aware of what the other was thinking. He knew about the woman at the well.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what she had done.
Yeah.
And not only is he smelling the sin, he's seeing it. He knows why they're in the position that they're in and in need of healing. Did he not have to process that love? But he did. Mm. And it says that he lived perfectly. I need to learn to process how to love wholly and holy. So both all of me and in a way that is classified as holy. And I will go astray, as we just read that word. It's going to happen. And his love will always cover. Will I choose to love in this grace with others is the question. Because I'm real glad to pick up his grace.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they did that thing.
Right.
You don't know what they did.
Mm-hmm.
He hurt me so bad over and over again. And he did the thing, and he did it with my best friend or whatever it might be that you're thinking right now. He saw the sin on people, processed it, and yet, Romans 5:8, while we were still sinners, died for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not just 3 years of great ministry. Oh, he had a powerful message today, didn't he? Sermon on the Mount, am I right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
3 years of blood, sweat, and tears, not just in the garden.
Yeah.
We know what that feels like if we're moms and dads too. I mean, or you're a part of you're a manager over a group of people or whatever position you have. If you've had to tend to the needs of people, people can be awesome and people can suck the life out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus processed it. So will I love? When God allows things that I don't understand, will I trust him with it? And it's not that I will need to cover God with grace. That's impossible. But trust, I think, is like my way of showing the same kind of thing back. If that makes sense. He ushers in grace for me. Can I trust him with problems at hand? Can I trust him with my best friend and that guy and the betrayal of that? Can I trust him with that? Because that shows the kind of love that he's shown me back. I can't give him grace. He's perfect. But I can trust.
I mean, that's our response to him, right?
It should be.
Yeah.
Can I trust him with not understanding fully the Trinity?
Yeah.
Can I trust that he still died on the cross? Because factually, we know he did. Historically, it's been proven.
Mm-hmm.
Can I trust? And there is that part of us that will never be able to explain that into the lives of people, but the Holy Spirit can.
Yeah, no, that's good. Well, and, you know, as your shirt says that we haven't acknowledged yet.
I know!
fall for Jesus. He never leaves, and there's a it's a autumn fall pun.
Do you remember the Back to the Future? Why don't you make like a tree
and leave?
And no, he said, "Get out of here."
Oh, he said, "Get." That's right. Yes, that's right. I forgot
about
that.
Can't get the joke right.
Yeah, that's. I love that. All right. If you want to see the shirt, you can text "quiet" to the number 893-893. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.